Welcome back to In the Moment. Breaking the cycle of domestic and sexual violence is not easy, but it is possible. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, so we've asked Michelle Markgraf from the Compass Center to join us again on In the Moment. She serves as Executive Director for the Compass Center. Michelle, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us today is Jeannie Chamna. She's a counselor for the Compass Center. Jeannie, how's it going?
Good to hear your voice, Lori.
Good to hear your voice. Jeannie and I go way back, and I'm so excited to have you on the show and share some of the work that you're doing to support women and men who have experienced sexual assault. So thanks, Jeannie, for being here.
Thank you.
Michelle, let's start with you. And I know you were on our program not too long ago, but I don't think that it's a problem to sort of repeat some of those really important messages that we talked about last time. Do you agree? There's some things you can just not, you know, hear enough. You never know who's tuning in this time.
Definitely. This is something people don't like to talk about, but definitely something that's happening, and we need to make known and have people thinking about what's happening in our community.
So tell me about the Compass Center and the services that you provide.
Sure. The Compass Center is in Sioux Falls, and it provides free both advocacy and counseling to survivors of both sexual and domestic violence. And people come here for as long as they need to. Some people come just a couple of times for counseling. Some people have been here 3, 4, 5 years to get the counseling that they need. We start with ages 3 through 12. They get play therapy here, which is a very specialized therapy for kiddos. And then we also work with teens and adults. We've got 4 counselors who specialize in the older populations.
Do you need to tell me, because I remember we've known each other from a time before you were doing this work at the Compass Center, and I remember how passionate you were to sort of move your professional career in this direction to serve others. Tell me, you know, what made you want to move in that direction and have some of those really difficult interactions and difficult conversations at work?
Well, Lori, that's a good question, but it's kind of a complicated answer. It's one of the things that I think I always knew I wanted to do, and the Compass Center was always one of the places that I aspired to work at. Since I've been here, I realize how important this work is, and it's really great to be a part of people's journeys as they start to heal.
What has sort of surprised you then? I know you can't talk about individual cases, but overall, you know, you enter this field and you have a certain expectation, and then you're hit with the reality. What was different than what you thought it was going to be?
Well, I don't think there's anything that could ever really prepare you for some of the stories you hear. I'll admit I've led a fairly sheltered life, but learning some of the painful upbringings people had and some of the just the constant pain they had throughout their life, and the people who've been assaulted once are more likely to be assaulted again, and so hearing people who've gone through this over and over again, that was the biggest surprise for me, and that's been the biggest thing to get used to, to expect.
Do you think that you find people who have, I'm going to put that in quotations, gotten used to the fact that that's just the way life is, and they need to sort of be convinced that there's hope if, you know, around the corner for them?
I think sometimes that's definitely the case. I think there are some people that come here once or twice, and then they don't come back, and I think it's because they don't realize they can get better, and they don't realize that they can commit the time to getting better, that it's actually a possibility. I do think that's the case, and I hate the phrase getting used to it, and I'm sorry I used it.
Right, me too, but I think people understand the intention of what we're saying, is that there's, you know, some kind of normalization about the kind. It's a difficult conversation, but then, you know, you're in some ways not surprised either. Michelle, how do we grapple with that sort of, you know, what we're grappling with? Is it in some ways, you know, we want to think it's rare, and in other ways we shrug our shoulders and say, well, that's all the time. Where do we begin?
I think you hit the nail on the head. We have to normalize that this is something that is happening. It's something that has happened to somebody that's close to you, if not to you yourself. The stats are usually for women, 1 out of every 5 women has been raped or has an attempted rape in their lifetime. So looking out around at your circle of friends, I'm sure everybody's got more than 5 women friends, and it's happened to somebody that they know. And so we need to normalize that, have people not afraid to come forward and say, this happened to me and I need help. and not to be afraid to come to the Compass Center and get the help that they need to set their lives back into normalcy again and get them back into the swing of their life.
How difficult is that threshold to walk over? And, you know, it's a physical threshold and a metaphorical one to say, I am not the person I was before this happened.
We talk a lot as a staff about the incredible amount of courage somebody has just walking in our door. And it is not uncommon for somebody to make two or three appointments before they actually physically come into our building. It is that tough for them. We've seen people drive up, stay in their car, and then drive away. It is very tough for them to confront what happened to them and to admit something so personal happened to them, because they come to us with a lot of guilt, thinking, I should have done this. I should have done this. If I hadn't been here, it wouldn't have happened. And we need to get past that and say, it wasn't your fault. It was completely the abuser's fault.
Hmm. Jeannie, how do you wrestle with guilt?
With guilt? Well,
yeah.
A lot of it is kind of, once again, it's back to normalizing. It's letting people know that this isn't something that you did, and that this is something that the attacker did, and working with them to kind of process forgiving themselves and recognizing that other people could have stepped up to help them too.
Mm. What are the first steps, first really important steps, Michelle? So crossing the threshold, having the conversation with a professional that you can trust is probably number one, just getting there. You know, what comes next?
We talk a lot about safety here at the Compass Center, because we know that for a lot of people, if they've been victimized once, the chance goes way higher for them to have that happen to them a second time. So probably one of the first things that we're doing, and every single time a person walks in our door, we are assessing safety in their situation and talking with them about ways to be safe. So that's a huge thing for us. We don't want anybody to be hurt again.
Why is that the chances are so increased once it's happened?
That's a good question. Some of it has to do with they now feel like they're used goods, or they feel that they're not worthy. And so unconsciously, some people might seek out the same things that kind of confirms what they feel about themselves. And that's why the Compass Center is so important, is we need to teach them, it wasn't your fault, yet you are worthy. You did not deserve to have that happen to you. Mm. Nothing in your life made you deserve that. And so to teach them to be strong women and men, again, to go out and live their daily lives and not have themselves be victimized.
Jeannie, do you work with women and men of all ages?
I primarily work with, I only see a handful of men because that's just not the largest portion of our clientele. Most of the people I work with are adults. I'd say the youngest person I work with right now is 16 and, you know, into 50s and 60s.
How does it change at different stages of life, the sort of process of moving past something and beginning the journey of healing? You know, a 16-year-old, is that a different conversation than you have with a 60-year-old?
Yes, and a 16-year-old conversation may take a lot longer because it's really difficult to establish that trust with an adult that you don't know. Mm. So establishing the relationship is probably the most important thing we do after assuring safety. So with a younger person, it's basically being a safe place for them to talk about what happened and feeling okay with using the words that are difficult to say. My older clients, I only have a handful, and it tends to be more, I should have known better. Mm. Why did I let this happen to me now? You know, I'm old enough to have seen things and to know, but so just kind of working with them to understand that, you know, you can't know better. You can't expect someone to do bad things to you. That's not the way people live. When it happens, it's not your fault.
Michelle, are there statistics for the nation or for the region, for Sioux Falls, that would indicate this problem is on the rise, is holding steady, or we're making progress on reducing the numbers of sexual assault?
When the Violence Against Women Act started quite a few years ago, about 20 years ago, we saw a decrease. And now it's pretty much holding steady from year to year, the amount of sexual violence that is being reported to law enforcement. One thing we know, though, is that in South Dakota, we think that we are special, and we are. South Dakota is a great place to live, and that it doesn't happen here. But unfortunately, it happens here just like it does across the rest of the nation. And when the FBI runs the numbers for the per capita numbers of rapes, they find that South Dakota is the second highest in the entire nation for per capita rapes. Really? So it's happening here. It's happening more frequently than other places.
What is driving that number to be so high for the state of South Dakota?
Unfortunately, the FBI only gives us the numbers. They don't do any kind of investigation into why that is, so that's kind of hard for me to say. The number one state is Alaska. Number two is South Dakota. So kind of looking at both the colder climates, I think drinking is probably higher in both states. And so some of those things play into what happens here.
What sort of legislative or public policy things do you think are helping, you know, helping address sexual violence against women?
A huge thing is that people now understand that privacy is needed, confidentiality, and all of our counselors are protected by that confidentiality, where somebody can come in, talk to us, and they know that we are not going to tell anybody that they're here. In fact, we are able to, because we don't take insurance, people can come to us and give us an assumed name and get all of their services from us under that fake name, so there's no way anybody can find out that they are working with us. And then there's some laws in place where we do not have to report to law enforcement. The only times that we would is if we think somebody is going to be killed or kill somebody or commit suicide, then we would tell law enforcement. Otherwise, there are laws in place where law enforcement knows that they can ask us questions, and we can say, I'm sorry, I can't confirm or deny that I know that person.
Okay.
And so that's a good protection for us, that we don't have to be fighting with anybody. Everybody understands that we cannot give information about a client.
So someone can confront the situation without ever having to confront the attacker, if that's
right.
Their choice.
Yep.
So
definitely.
What legislation do you need, or would you like public policy, that would make your life a little bit happier?
One thing we have noticed recently is one of our staff is a victim advocate who is not a counselor, so she does not have the confidentiality that counselors enjoy. So she can be subpoenaed to court, and she can't claim that confidentiality piece. Hmm. We would like to introduce into legislation that person, a victim advocate, is also a confidential person, and their records cannot be subpoenaed, or we have to go through, extra court orders in order to get records, rather than having her be somebody that can easily be subpoenaed and put on the court docket.
What exactly does a victim advocate do then that's different from a counselor?
She does all the pieces that a counselor does not do. If somebody needs a protection order, she will actually sit, listen to their story, and write the protection order for them. She's in protection order court every week, so she knows how a judge is ruling and what a judge looks for. And she makes sure that if those pieces are available, that she puts those in the order. And then she'll walk the client through where to go to file that protection order, and then once it's accepted, where to go to the sheriff's office so that he can deliver it to the perpetrator. Hmm. She also helps people to get ready for trial. So she'll pretend like she's the defense attorney and throw the hard questions at a client here in the office so that they can figure out, know how that feels so they're ready for it when it comes to them in trial. Hmm. And she also helps with connecting people to other community resources that are available to them. For some of our clients, that means they're leaving a domestic violence situation and they need to figure out where they can go for food, clothing, shelter, that kind of thing. For other people, maybe we've got somebody who came here from Mitchell and they need to find out where those resources are in Mitchell. So helping them figure out what's available to them in that community. And for others, it might be they want to flee and go to live with their mother in Oklahoma. So it's getting them the bus ticket to be able to leave South Dakota and get to a safe place.
Do we have the community resources in South Dakota that support that sort of safety and
We do have some. There are some very good places to go. I think across all of the nation, as well as South Dakota, housing is always a difficult matter of finding available housing and cheap housing in order to help somebody to leave an abuser.
Mm-hmm. Jeannie, is social media and the internet impacting, you know, the folks that you see coming in your door every day? Are you hearing stories of that being part of the problem?
Sometimes, but not as often as I would have expected. I've had clients come in whose exes have opened fake Facebook pages for them and posted nude photos of them or them doing drugs when they just got out of rehab and they weren't doing drugs anymore. I've had people who were being trafficked, and the trafficker sent their ads to their children so their children would know that they were prostituting themselves or they were being trafficked. So it does happen. It's not all the time, but it does happen pretty regularly.
So is that a whole part of this campaign to make someone feel like they are worthless or this is their fault? Is that part of sort of the psychological game that an attacker can also play?
Oh, absolutely. As you kind of diminish and you isolate them from their support groups and their support systems and throw all the negative things that anybody has ever done in that scenario, sure, absolutely. It makes you feel less yourself, and it makes you more dependent on the attacker as well.
So you work on safety, you build the relationship, Jeannie, and then what are the skills that people who have survived this need to build next?
We talk a lot about boundaries. We talk about establishing what's okay for you and what are you willing to allow and what are you not willing to allow. We talk a lot about self-esteem and figuring out who you are and who you were before this person entered your life, and just basically work on processing through. Some people will never tell me their story of what actually happened, and that's okay. We're just trying to figure out ways to get to feeling okay with themselves in their daily lives.
Let's talk about boundaries then, and assume somebody's tuning in and thinking about stopping down and visiting the Compass Center and telling a story or just accessing the resources there. What's the message about boundaries that you would like to, or maybe even tell, kids in a high school?
I think one of the things we always give people when they come in is a copy of the Power and Control Wheel, and it basically talks about different ways that people can control you, because sometimes it's a little surprising. It's not just, people hitting you. That's not the only kind of abuse. It's someone, like I said, isolating you from your family, belittling the things you have to say, controlling your money or your access to vehicles or your ability to travel. So there's lots of different areas where people have to kind of start being aware that, oh, wow, there too. That's another place where they were controlling me. And so finding ways to stop and say, no, that's not okay. That's not a healthy thing for you to do, and I'm not okay with you doing that.
What's it like to sort of walk through that journey with someone and watch them make really great strides and progress? What's that like for you personally?
It is the best feeling ever. Got a handful of clients. In fact, yesterday someone came in, and I've been seeing her basically since I started here. And we spent the entire hour talking about, hey, look what you're doing now compared to what you were doing then, and look at where your life is now. And it was just a wonderful hour. It was terrific.
Michelle, any final thoughts here?
We just want to know people to know that our services are available. While we usually are the 4-county area around Sioux Falls, we will see anybody who comes in our door. We'll answer the phone for anybody who calls throughout the state. Just to know that our services are available, 100% free, 100% confidential, and we don't want anybody to not come to us just because they didn't know about the services. So even if you don't need the service, tell a friend, tell a neighbor. You never know who has had violence in their life and who needs help.
All right. Give us a phone number then, or a website.
We are at, website is thecompasscenter.org, and our phone number is 605-339-0116.
All right, Michelle and Jeannie from the Compass Center talking for April being Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Thank you both for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.